Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, and welcome to Gaze on Film. This podcast is where we, a pair of gays, talk about what we're watching. I am Declan.
And I'm Ned.
And in this episode, we're going to be talking about Saltburn. That's Saltburn, not Saltburn by the Sea.
I don't think very many people will get that.
All right. We'll be talking spoilers throughout, as always, so do proceed with caution. But before all that, Ned, I'd love to know what you've been watching since we last recorded.
What have I been watching?
There's quite a lot on the list because we haven't recorded in a couple of weeks.
So obviously it's Christmas season now. So I decided to wreak havoc on our Instagram story and run a little poll. Is it a poll? One of them questions.
No, I wouldn't call it a poll.
No, it wasn't a poll. It was the one where there's a right or a wrong answer.
Yeah, and I was mortified. I was on my own Instagram. I clicked through, is Die Hard a Christmas film? And I thought, it must have put yes. So I clicked what I thought my answer was, and I thought, does he really think that? Or is he just, as you say, causing mischief?
Causing mischief at Christmas, because what better reason to... I thought I'd seen Die Hard before, but it turns out I never have, so thought it was quite good. I don't think I've put it on Letterboxd yet, actually.
Okay.
It will be on there by the time this recording goes out, though. Yeah, had a good time with it. Don't think I'll race to watch it every single year. Not really what gets me in the Christmas spirit.
Do you know what I would like to make a comment about Christmas films?
What?
I don't really like rewatching films. And there's not many Christmas films. You know, like, as soon as December hits, everyone just seems to be watching, like, the classics again.
Films. Yeah.
I can't do it. Oh. I prefer to watch some new ones. Okay. Even though they don't tend to be as good as the classics.
That's fine.
But it's something about it. I just, like, everyone's like, oh, should we watch The Grinch? I'm like, no. Okay. Should we watch this? No. I mean, we think we've landed on what we're going to do for our Christmas time capsule episode, but I haven't seen that in years, so I'm quite happy about that.
I'm excited for that one.
So, yeah.
Okay.
We put our tree up this weekend, and again, when we were like, should we put a Christmas film on, I was like, I don't want to, for the reasons I've just stated. So what did we watch?
We watched Mary Poppins Returns, which I'm sure was because you've seen it before.
I have seen it before. Yeah, that doesn't really make sense.
No.
But wasn't a Chris... it's not a Christmas film, but it came out in December a few years ago, and it feels inherently festive, and I enjoyed it just as much the second time. I like the music in it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I've never seen it before, and it's made me want to watch Mary Poppins again.
Really?
Have you ever seen Saving Mr. Banks?
Yes.
I like that film as well.
I like that film. With Tom Hanks.
Yeah. Emma Thompson as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I do like it. Yeah.
We're the Millers.
Did we watch this hungover?
It was definitely a Sunday.
After our friend's wedding. Hi, Emma and Josh. Thanks for such a gorgeous weekend.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. I woke up halfway through it. But I enjoyed what
I
saw.
Did you sleep?
On the sofa, yeah.
Silly you.
Yeah.
That's always good. It's like the right kind of comedy, I think. I think comedy as a genre has a tendency to skew a particular way that doesn't really appeal to me, but Where the Miller seems to hit the marks.
It's proper silly humour, but it is quite good.
Yeah.
And I think it came out that long ago now, it almost feels a bit nostalgic as well.
Yeah, it must have been when I was a student that it came out.
I think it was quite a while ago. It's at least 10 years, I want to say.
Call me out.
What?
For being a student 10 years ago.
Oh, you scared me then. Ah. I want to have a look, actually. 2013, and... so 10 years.
Wow, it is 10 years. Great. Yeah. And Lindsay Lohan in Just
You don't
My
seem
Look.
Very...
I can't quite switch
Peppy.
On. I can't switch on. I don't really know. I'm having one of them weeks where I can't really get my head in gear.
No.
So, come on, tell me what you've been watching.
Well, I finished Gen V, which is the boys' spin-off on Amazon Prime, which was a lot of fun, a lot of absolutely ridiculous sequences, as you would expect from that universe.
Mm-hmm.
I love the satire. I love the way it connected into the wider story of The Boys. And if you're a Boys fan and you haven't watched Gen V, I would very much recommend. Mm. I'm also randomly doing a Harry Potter rewatch.
For no reason.
There was one night I was like, I want to watch a film. This is again contradicting what I said about rewatching films. I want to watch a film that I've seen before that I don't have to pay that much attention to.
Yeah.
And it's got me into a Harry Potter hole.
Oh.
Not Harry Potter's hole.
Lucky Daniel Radcliffe.
But, so I've watched 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely mad to me, the tonal shift between the first two and then what then comes after with the rest of them. Granted, I know the films get darker and darker every time, which I always remember when we used to see them. It was like, even the colour palette on the films, it's like the colour saturation gets darker.
Yeah, but also the target audience grew up with them, so it was able to appeal to kind of a maturing.
But the first two are just such different films, but I actually really enjoyed watching them again.
Yeah.
The Chamber of Secrets is too long. It's like 2 hours 50, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, for the... In my opinion, the weakest book and the weakest film are the Chamber of Secrets.
Weakest film?
It's not my favourite. Weak is very a strong word, I think, but...
Actually, yeah, probably. Favorite. Although I think all of them flip between 3.5. No, 3-star and 4.5.
Mm.
Maybe 4. 4.5 seems a bit...
generous.
Yeah. Yeah. But
I never bother with the last three either. Can't be arse.
Oh, see, I'm going to watch them all.
I always just watch the first
five. I'm looking forward to Order of Phoenix because I always remember it was the film where they didn't have to say words when they cast spells anymore. They were like having battles with the wands and it was just like, psh, 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 like that. And I always liked that.
Right.
So, yes, but I did watch them in quite quick succession. We also went to see Napoleon at the weekend.
Yeah.
So November for me at the cinema was a little bit of a disappointing month.
All right.
To be honest. And this links into what else we saw at the cinema. Other than Leeds Film Festival.
Yeah.
Which is like different because a lot of these films won't come out till the new year anyway.
Mm.
But I was disappointed by both Napoleon and I was especially disappointed by The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
Okay.
Not that Napoleon, out of the two, I preferred Napoleon.
I don't really know why you're comparing them, to be honest.
I'm just
really
like
different.
Thinking of like November releases in the cinema, I don't know why.
Right.
But I found Napoleon suffered from, it tries to cover too much of his life in one film. To me, it could do with, like, the Crown treatment where it goes through, like, a series.
Mm.
Like, it spanned, what, 30-odd years, maybe?
If not more.
And he didn't change, which always annoys me.
No, he did.
He didn't look any older.
His hair got greyer.
Other than that. My hair's grey and I'm 29.
I know.
And I don't know, I just didn't think it was... like the action sequences and the battle sequences were really good, but I think in a world where like some of the war sequences Game of Thrones and the likes have done, yeah, it just wasn't, it didn't match up to it.
Yeah, I think its trailer promised an epic of what kind of proportions? You know the kind of vibe, yeah, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
But to me, it didn't deliver.
Didn't deliver on its promise, did it?
It didn't deliver on its promise. I think I didn't quite get as emotionally invested as I wanted it to want me to, because of, I think, the jumping through the timeline a little bit too fast. Having said that, I thought that the camera work was really cool, especially the battle where they were all going in the ice.
Mm.
That was really fun. And I generally had a good time watching it, but there are just a few kind of not quite hits for me.
I think it was probably a bit of a script problem as well for me. I think if you're going to center the story about Napoleon and his wife's relationship, whose name I cannot
remember. Josephine.
Josephine. That didn't feel fully fleshed out to me. And I think it was due to trying to span so much time in 2.5 hours.
Mm. I kind of felt like it was weird that they didn't use any French words, yeah, in there, right? Like, they didn't even say, like, merci instead of thank you.
I heard Vive la France a few times in the battles.
I heard long live the king or long live the revolution or something, which you could put in French and audiences would,
I think,
know
they probably
meant.
Did it, like, yeah, I thought that. And I thought, I'm quite glad Hakim's not doing a French accent, because what's the point?
Yeah, I didn't think it needed French accents per se, but like a couple of French words peppered throughout, just to remind you that you're in France, not Britain or America.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And then The Hunger Games, Ballads of Songbirds and Snakes. So I gave Napoleon 3-star and Hunger Games, I actually gave 2-star. And I can't really put into words why, but all I know is I found the third act incredibly boring. So much so, I was like constantly looking at my watch. I thought,
like after the Hunger Games,
yeah,
when they're in the woods.
Yeah. I thought, who plays Lucy Gray? I totally forgot.
From West Side Story.
Why can't that? That's not coming into my head. But anyway.
Rachel Zegler,
yeah. I thought her characterisation, I think she's a good actor, but I thought her character and characterisation was awful. I thought if she sings, are you, any more times, I'm literally going to walk out of this cinema. The Hanging Tree.
I think that was only in it twice.
It was in it loads?
No, she had another song.
Oh, well, the songs were annoying as well. I just didn't like it. I thought it was a really weirdly paced film. I thought Tom Blythe as a young Coriolanus was very good, and I do look forward to seeing his career hopefully blossom. But unfortunately, I didn't like it, and I'd be quite happy if The Hunger Games stayed as a franchise that ended its run.
I think that I enjoyed watching it, but thinking about the story, it didn't really need telling. You know what I mean? It's like,
I think probably HarperCollins approached Suzanne Collins and said, is there any of the stories you can do in The Hunger Games? Because we know it'll sell a load of books.
Yeah.
She was like, yeah, there's probably one percolating in my brain. I'll have a go. And then they've adapted it into a film and it was crap.
Maybe you've hit the nail on the head there.
And I hope she doesn't do any more.
Okay.
I think that's it. There are another few TV shows I've started watching, but I'll keep that to the next episode. It's been going for a little bit now.
Right.
Well, there's some good recommendations in there, I think.
Yeah. Well, what's been going on in the news?
So, and I'm going to handle this with some sensitivity, but the Israel-Gaza conflict is causing problems in Hollywood.
I think it's possibly the least of their concerns, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, well, yeah. Obviously, I'm not quite, yeah, like, I'm sure the people in Israel and Gaza are having a worse time.
Yeah.
And one thing that seems to have happened is Scream 7 has kind of totally imploded on itself. So Melissa Barrera, Melissa Barrera and Jenna Ortega, who are the Carpenter sisters, if you recall at the end of Scream 6, were pretty much kind of, this trilogy they've said of these films, 5, 6 and 7, are like their story. Mm. Now, it was revealed that due to her pro-Palestinian stance, that she had been let go from the film. And then the day after, it was also announced that Jenna Ortega would not be returning, but it was nothing to do with what had happened the day before, her scheduling due to Wednesday season 2, due to what had happened with all the strikes, pushing everything, moving everything. That was the reason, and they couldn't announce, and that news had been in the bag for a long time, but they couldn't announce it until post-strikes. All a bit fishy to me.
Okay.
That it came the day after. But it's just really interesting, and I guess I wanted to share the news because probably wanted to ask your opinion and maybe start a bit of a discussion.
Me or the listeners?
You.
Right.
Actors are obviously people.
Yeah.
And they have the right to showcase their views.
Yeah.
Now, all that Melissa Barrera said, and I don't really want to get into our own views on what's happening, but all Melissa Barrera said is the genocide that's happening in Gaza is not on and not proportionate as to what happened.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think that is enough to warrant her being sacked.
No.
But I know that America is quite pro-Israel, I think.
I don't know where you're going with this without getting into our views and turning this into a...
No, I just think, well, let's not necessarily talk about Gaza, Israel, right? But do you think actors should keep their mouth shut when it comes to current political events? Or do you think they should showcase it? Because what I worry about is the world is becoming so polarised over everything.
Mm.
I always remember that news about they were trying to get Taylor Swift to say who she would vote for as president. She was like, I'm not saying... And then I think she eventually said she wouldn't vote for Trump, but then she received quite a lot of backlash because she has quite a lot of Republican followers from her country days and all that kind of stuff. And it's just really interesting. And Susan Sarandon did say some quite... I didn't like what she said, but I can't recall it.
Right.
And that guy from Stranger Things has been videoed on Instagram with like badges saying like, Zionism is sexy and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
I don't really know what I'm trying to say, but just about current affairs affecting Hollywood.
I think that take it out of like the cultural sector, put it somewhere else corporate where it doesn't particularly have a big visible thing. I can understand why bosses maybe are tempted to address contentious issues with their staff to make sure that nobody is suggesting that the views of themselves represent the views of their employer.
Yeah.
I think it often comes from a concern around sort of perception and like, you know, relationships with all of the stakeholders that you might engage with. If you're a company trying to engage with diverse stakeholders, it can be problematic for your business model to take sides in such things.
Yeah, that's true.
Which I suppose makes sense. But this is a cultural sector thing and
cultural they're not changing events. The world, are they?
Well, but also the power of cinema and things does have a lot of influence over the way people understand current events.
Yeah.
And even historical events.
Well, yeah, even like think about this year, Oppenheimer, not the same, but yeah.
I think
the understanding of what that story did and what happened with that invention and all that kind of stuff that came.
It depends on the motivation for sacking Melissa Barrera. If it was because we would rather you take a pro-Israel stance on this, then that to me seems unfair, because that's dictating what someone's views are. If it was a, we don't want to get caught up in this culture thing,
yeah,
this dispute, so we need to distance ourselves from people who are vocal about it, I don't know.
I think Hollywood might have a problem with this moving forward, though, because I think there's a lot of young actors coming into into mainstream Hollywood blockbusters that have very much got a lot of young people now are quite active activists.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of them will want to use their social media following and platform to affect change. I think it was quite easy back in the day for someone like Angelina Jolie to say, I want to end world hunger.
It's like a pageant answer.
Yeah, it is. Whereas now things are getting quite complex.
Well, and also people are staring the consequences of environmental destruction and social inequality in the face every day.
Yeah.
It's no wonder that people want to use whatever voice they've got.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Although I will caveat that I don't think Instagram stories are necessarily the place. And this might be being a bit of a boomer, but I just don't think they give enough context to what mean by sharing that.
That is largely a problem with social media as it is set up and engaged with, but it doesn't mean that, like, if your Instagram story is the only access to a platform that you have to voice whatever you need to say, then it's the one you're going to use, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that I didn't really know what I was getting at with that news, but I'm glad I did bring it up, because I feel like we have had a decent-ish conversation about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, what a time we've had. But now it's time to cast our minds into the future and get excited for what's coming up in the world of TV.
Film. Sorry, is the script not updated? Sorry.
It's time now for Trailer, Trash or Treasure. What have we got this week?
We have got Furiosa, a Mad Max saga, which serves as both a spin-off and a prequel to Mad Max Fury Road, which came out in 2015, and is overall the fifth film in the Mad Max franchise. Mm. Won't say any more yet. We'll go watch the trailer, but as always, the link is in the show notes, so if you'd like to watch along, pause it, and then come back. Pause it, watch it, then come. We always mince this bit, don't we? It doesn't matter who's... You do.
No.
You do. But anyway, yeah, see you after the sparkles.
Do you have to have seen the other ones?
I love that you just asked me. I think you will get a lot more from it if you've seen Mad Max Fury Road from 2015.
Okay.
Which is a film that I think... How old will I have been? 21. I don't think I appreciated just how good it is. Because, I swear, and I'm Googling it now, Empire magazine or... in 2020, did a survey of people to get the best films of the 21st century so far.
Mm.
So we're 20 years in.
Mm.
And Mad Max Fury Road was number one.
Wow.
And Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring was number two. So, like...
That's the calibre of film.
That's the calibre we're talking. And I will say, this trailer has made my anticipation for this film rocket way higher, and I think it's probably one of the most anticipated releases of next year for me.
Wow, big words.
I just think it looks so cool.
I mean,
I like the score, I like the way it looks.
I am partial to a dystopian setting, which it looks like Mad Max is, not knowing anything about it.
So as far as I'm aware, Mad Max, when it mentions in the trailer and about the franchise, the collapse is like the collapse of civilization. And it's a bit like a... it does have like a climate change analogy, because everywhere just becomes like dust.
Desert.
And desert, yeah.
Yeah.
So I will definitely be revisiting Mad Max Fury Road before we see this.
Definitely. It doesn't give too much of a plot
It doesn't,
away.
Which it's probably classed as a teaser with it being the first trailer. But I think Anya Taylor... So Furiosa, who this obviously centres around, in Fury Road, that character is played by Charlize Theron. But I do think Anya Taylor-Joy, as a younger version of her, is very good casting. And something about Anya's big eyes. She's got big eyes, hasn't she?
Big eyes.
She does. Like, something about them does it really well for this film. Like, it in the way the whites of her eyes stick out against all this black and desert and muck and shit. Like, I just think it looks really good. Doesn't Great. Look like Chris Hemsworth, because he seems to be wearing a prosthetic nose. And it did take me a bit to be like, oh, that's Chris Hemsworth.
I wouldn't have known that if I don't know what I was
obviously
say
the trailer
then, I wouldn't have known that
puts on the title Anya Taylor-Joy, Chris Hemsworth, and then I was like, oh so that was Chris Hemsworth. So yeah, really cool.
Trash or treasure?
Absolute treasure for me. You oh come on,
I mean, it's not made me want to watch it.
Has it not?
Not particularly.
Oh my God.
I don't get what it's trying to sell. Like, I don't know. Maybe if I'd have seen Mad Max before.
Okay. So what is it?
I guess trash.
Oh! But the trailer's it's cut so well. It's such a good trailer. Like, it's objectively a good trailer.
Okay.
Doesn't give too much away. Looks cool. Score's cool. All that kind of stuff.
Right, yeah.
But it's all right. I appreciate your opinion.
I think just
on this...
all the words in the trailer, like, remember her, this is her odyssey. No, I don't remember her because I've never met her before.
Okay. Well, it's out at the end of May next year. So it is very much in summer blockbuster season.
Lovely. And now for this week's headline feature... it's Saltburn, coming up after the break.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So, Emerald Fennell Saltburn. Let me do a synopsis first, which I will say Ned hasn't done a synopsis this time, so I'm just stealing it from this fantastic website called imdb.com.
Right.
But it goes, a student at Oxford University finds himself drawn into the world of a charming and aristocratic classmate who invites him to his eccentric family's sprawling estate for a summer never to be forgotten. Pretty good one, to be fair.
Yeah, I think that's not a million miles away from something I would have come up with had I paid attention when I was writing my notes.
First thoughts, then?
I would like to start our discussion by saying that I actually had a really good time watching this film.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have a feeling that when we talk about certain aspects of it, it's going to sound like it didn't. But actually, I think it's a really good film. So I want to
I
want to lay that out there straight away, because it is.
I think when we get to that, I think even my opinion of the film, and when we get to star ratings later, I really enjoyed watching it, and I found it beautiful. Like, yeah. It was very much a film where the style of it and every frame could have been a picture. It was beautifully shot.
It was
shot.
Very, like, intentional in the shots.
I thought I really liked that kind of mid-2000s, mid-noughties setting. I don't think it's a period that we've had a lot in films yet.
No, we're just... I think Y2K is quite fashionable among the Gen Zs.
And I wonder if
like this is the start of that kind of era for cinema.
Starting to kick in for that kind of nostalgic feeling.
Because I really liked, just before we move up too far away from the visuals, the title card.
Yeah.
It was really cool. It was like old-timey stitching almost. Like
I did actually read an interview with Emerald Fennell about that. And even for the kind of detail that she's gone into, they could have just used a font, but they actually got someone to hand draw the title card. Which those kind of little details I kind of really appreciate.
Yeah,
been a good few title cards this year, actually. That and Evil Dead Rise.
Evil Dead Rise is such a good title card.
But it had... I just got to talk about the name first as well. Yeah. So in that same interview that I read, Emerald Fennell was like, I just heard the place named Saltburn and just thought it sounded like the most lavish, beautiful place. I'm going to have to call it Saltburn. And I thought, I do love Saltburn. It is probably one of my favourite places on the planet because it's very close to where I'm from.
Yeah.
And we used to go there all the time on the beach with walking the dog.
Yeah.
But it was a bit weird for it to be, for her to have that reaction to the name, because what the film portrays is very different to the Saltburn that I know.
Yeah.
But that's a very personal experience from me. But yeah, it was a bit strange.
Yeah.
She just thought it sounded sexy.
Which I suppose maybe if you weren't from where we're from, it wouldn't mean the same thing. So we're just...
I'm not saying it took me out the film, because that would be ridiculous, but it took me out of the...
I think part of the excitement for when Saltburn was released was that we weren't entirely sure if it was going to be set in or around Saltburn by the Sea in the north.
Until I started seeing, like... Until we got some teasers for it, I was like, oh, it's got absolutely nothing to do with where I'm from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's just sort of one of those ever so tiny minor disappointments. But that's nobody's fault, really.
But the thing I rub up against in this film, which is actually quite a good pun, which I didn't mean to do. I liked the themes of desire, lust.
Yeah.
Kind of obsessive love. What I didn't mesh with and didn't get what it was trying to do is the commentary on class.
Yeah, and I know since watching it, I know why it didn't make so much sense. But when we came out of the screening, we were like, it was good, but I think there was something not quite, almost not there with it. Because it felt very like it was gearing up to be, to sit quite nicely alongside some of the Eat the Rich type films that we've seen over the last couple of years.
But it wasn't at all.
But it wasn't. And then I started reading about it and learned that Emerald Fennell is closer to the aristocratic side of it than she is.
Incredibly posh.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She's a really posh person.
Yeah.
So maybe it felt like it was trying to be a critique of class structures, but because it doesn't come from someone whose voice represents a position that can really critique it.
Yeah.
That was kind of what was missing in the story.
Well, because overall, you start the film feeling sorry for Oliver, who's played by Barry Keoghan.
Yeah.
Then he kind of nestles himself into the family.
Yeah.
And then it's almost like it's trying to get you to feel sorry for the wealthy because of what he then goes on to do.
Yeah.
But
it's like it's not so much eat the rich as please don't eat us, we're nice.
Yes. But they're not. Well,
I don't really know what to do with it because individually, I didn't really have a problem with any of those characters.
No, me neither.
And I think my best pal Frankie hit the nail on the head when she said the most interesting character in the whole thing was Farley.
Yeah.
The cousin from America who's mixed race, who was staying at Saltburn with the family.
So why did she say that he was, what was her reason?
He had loads of depth and he like touched on some really kind of crucial perspective that had it then been explored through the rest of the film, like kind of commentary on where all this wealth came from and how it's a bit what's the word? Like commenting on the fact that the black member of the family has to rely on the
money.
Like the generosity,
yeah.
In quotes,
yeah.
Of his white uncle, because his white uncle's the one that's got all the wealth, and also kind of the staff that they have in the house. He notices that none of them know their names and things like that, and all of these like little pieces, like breadcrumbs, are there. Which, had they been explored, this would have been a really good Eat the Rich film.
Yeah, and I think I would have enjoyed this film a lot more if it didn't do the rug pull in the final act that it attempts to do.
Yeah.
So basically, what we see with this film is Oliver, as I say, played by Barry Keoghan, who I will say is absolutely magnificent in this.
Oh, smashing, yeah.
So like, good. So, like, menacing and, but, like, charming and, like...
But not even remotely menacing until...
Yeah.
Until things start to happen.
So like, he
really catches you.
He meets Felix, played by Jacob Elordi, at university. And he's one of those people that, like, everyone's obsessed with. And I do think... I think we've all met someone like that, especially at that age. There was always one or two people where it's like everyone wanted to be around them all the time. It's like they were infectious. You were lusting for them, whether it was from a platonic or a sexual perspective.
Yeah.
So they meet at university. Why does he fall out with him at uni? He falls out with him for some reason. Or does he's getting... Basically, like, brings Oliver into his friendship group and then he gets a bit sick of him and wants to cast him out. So what Oliver then does is knocks on his door and cries to say his dad has died.
Oh, yeah, and he spends all this...
Well, this is what we're... We don't know that.
Yeah.
So then, ultimately, he then invites Oliver to go to their summer house in Saltburn, which is this kind of... gorgeous, stately home, aristocratic place, where then he meets Felix's family. So we've got Sir James, who's played by Richard E. Grant, Lady Elspeth, who's played by
Rosamund Pike,
who is
so
fucking
good.
Fantastic in this.
She is so funny in this.
There's also their friend, Poor Dear, played by Carrie Mulligan. It is, even though she's not in it for very long, I like to see that her collaboration with Emerald Fennell is continuing after Promising Young Woman. Mm. But, I mean, Rosamund Pike, I do have one line that I did remember. And it's something about her comedic timing. Like, he says something to Pamela, who is Poor Dear, and Rosamund goes, oh, that's just giving me goosebumps. Look, Pamela. And Pamela's like, oh, no. And, like, reading that out is not funny, but when you see it, the timing of it is very funny.
Makes such a big deal out of getting goosebumps.
Like, because Oliver said something,
yeah,
whatever. And it's like, even when Oliver first goes there, I did quite like the conversations that Felix and his family are having about, oh, his dad's died. Like, they were like, oh, this poor working class boy, how can we help him?
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Oh, he's so down to earth. It's like, oh, we've got a token working classer, you know,
yeah,
to be around. And I liked all that at the start. But I would have much preferred if it kind of stayed on that track and probably just commented more on being obsessed with people. Because, I mean, some of the things that Oliver does in this film is shocking. So one thing, Felix's sister is hanging about below his bedroom window, so he goes down and performs oral sex on her.
Why did you say that so weirdly?
I don't know. I think that's how we're... But one of the most shocking bits is, like, Oliver and Felix share a bathroom.
I feel like you're brushing through all of these sex scenes really, really quickly. I thought we were going to...
All right, okay, go for it then. I don't know. I was just going to put them on the table.
Okay, yeah, put them on the table then.
So, drinking... So
he catches Felix having a wank in the bath.
Doesn't go in, which I would have done.
He just watches. And then, as the bathwater is draining away, he dunks his head in and drinks it.
It's not even like, he doesn't even go underwater, does it? It's like the dregs in the bottom and he's like slurping it up. I was like, oh my God.
I especially love that, like, that shot, the decision to put the camera in the bath.
Yeah.
And put Barry Keoghan's head, like, as if he's caressing the plug hole. And then he just slurps.
Oh. I was like, oh dear.
It's obviously a bit gross, obviously, to drink someone else's bathwater.
But the thing that I
it was such a sexy shot.
It was really sexy.
I was so confused by it because I didn't expect to find it so sexy.
And I think what Emerald Fennell does with this film is she actually puts into scenes the thoughts that some of us may have, like the deep desire, erotic thoughts.
Do you want to drink my bathwater?
No, but like, she's not frightened to just put them, because we've all had them probably.
No, it's very much like putting your intrusive thoughts on screen, isn't it?
I mean, the intrusive thoughts won with him.
And
I wouldn't even
time.
Necessarily say, it's not necessarily a bad thing what he does. Is it?
Well, I mean, not at that instance. But then when, like, at the end, the big twist and reveal,
and you're looking back,
everything he's done is bad.
So we discussed Farley, who was your best friend, Frankie's favourite character.
Yeah.
Another sex scene then comes. So Farley has a bit of a, he's the one that's kind of on to Oliver. He doesn't really like him. Although they do have one scene where they sit together and they're like, I don't mind you, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then Oliver uses his body. I don't know why I'm putting this all in such a...
What are you trying to say?
Well, he sneaks into Farley's room and sits on his...
cock.
Which, again, was a very erotic scene. Mm. And I don't think there's any kind of notion of non-consensual in it.
No.
It's very... It's like... And this is where I think you start to see the potential cracks in where this film is going. Because Barry Keoghan's character is, to me, using his dominance over their silly little rich people problems. And he uses sex with Farley to do that, in my opinion. This way, what I'm saying is you start to see the plot, oh, this might be going in a certain direction.
Yeah. I kind of got why he went and had sex with Venetia. I didn't really get why he went and had sex with Farley.
I just think he wanted to dominate him, make him feel a bit, you there, I'll use you.
Just Last time you told me off shaking the table.
Yeah, sorry. Like, I'll use you.
Yeah.
Which, it does flip it on its head, because some people say, oh, the fetishization of working class is quite a thing. But I think he almost fetishizes aristocracy and the poshies.
Well, I have a feeling that's what Emerald Fennell is trying to get at. I have a feeling that she's noticed that people are critiquing the fetishization of the working class and is almost responding to that with this, that middle class people fetishize aristocracy in some way.
Mm.
But that's what I think maybe didn't land, because I don't know that many middle class people that...
I wouldn't even say these are middle class.
Barry Keoghan is.
Oh, Barry, well, yeah.
When it comes to it.
Yeah. So, this is what I mean, like, it all then starts to fall a little bit away for me when it's Oliver's birthday, Felix surprises him by saying, we're going to drive home to see your mum, thinking that
it'd be she'll nice appreciate that. Grieving.
Rocks up at the door, the dad's not dead. So that starts to unravel.
And the mum's not an alcoholic.
They're actually quite a nice, normal family. But I think the Oliver's psyche is normal isn't enough.
I can kind of feel like if he's come from somewhere that's nice enough, nothing ever particularly goes on, and gets to Oxford, why he might feel like he hasn't got much of an edge to, like, make any friends or anything. But that's about the length of my understanding of where his motivation came from. Because it suddenly went from kind of creating a bit of a persona to heavily calculated manipulation in order to acquire the estate.
Yeah.
The Saltburn.
That's
estate.
What happens.
It
totally lost
there.
Me at that point.
It leapt there and I was like, well, what the fuck has just happened then? Because all of this looking back kind of makes sense, except it's nothing to do with his character in the slightest.
Well, it unravels that Felix ends up dying during Oliver's birthday party.
Yeah.
Then he sticks around at Saltburn because he's saying that Felix's mum can't cope without him because she's become obsessed with him.
She's almost treating him like a surrogate.
Sir James starts to twig onto kind of Oliver's manipulative traits.
Yeah.
Felix's sister then kills herself.
Yeah, in the bath.
And then in a flashback scene, basically we then, as it all ties up, we then get a flashback scene where basically every single thing that Oliver has done has been totally calculated right from the point where, like, there's a scene when they're at university and when Oliver has made friends with Felix's friends, offered to buy them all a drink.
Yeah.
And he goes on as if he can't afford it.
Yeah.
When he totally can. And Felix covers the bill for him.
It just...
So the full film has been a full calculation
of
this perfectly normal, not working class person, infiltrating himself into the upper class aristocracy and getting this house. Like, even when, like, the final part of the film where...
It's a few years later, and he's in that coffee shop, and lo and behold, Elsbeth walks in and is like, oh my God, Oliver, because, you know...
She was obsessed with it.
She's now on her own because it turns out her husband's died. Obviously, she lost her two kids.
And even the way he's like, oh, is Sir James still around? And she's like, no, he died. And Oliver knows fine well that he died.
Because he killed
him. And he even placed himself in that coffee shop to run into her.
Yeah. And it just kind of... I think it was trying to make me feel sorry for all of the people who, for the rest of the film, I thought it was supposed to be critiquing. And instead, it just sort of made me... I think maybe the flashbacks went a step too far.
It made me go, eh?
Yeah, it was just a couple of things. Like, I could get... If he'd got to Saltburn after having kind of made this persona thing, maybe lied because his dishonesty's gone a little bit too far and it's getting away with him, got to Saltburn, realised how wealthy they all are and how, I don't know, for whatever reason he feels they don't deserve that wealth, then decided to start, like, killing them off one by one, that would have made so much more sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, but left the razor blades out Felix's sister to...
Oh, I got the impression that he'd staged that as a suicide. He'd actually killed her.
No, he left them out. Yeah, they have a deep conversation and he left them out for her to do it.
Right, okay, yeah.
But, yeah, it was just...
It just kind of... it went too far.
I think we're hitting the nail on the head. We are like, eh?
The flashbacks...
What was that trying to get me to feel? Like, yeah. I don't get it.
The flashbacks, had the kind of, this is when this all started to pan out, started the moment he got to Saltburn, it had made a lot more sense. But the way the flashbacks came up at the end, it started the moment he got to Oxford. And I'm just like, I don't think you could have calculated that. Like,
it's a hell of a calculation, isn't it?
First off, getting into Oxford is difficult enough, let alone getting into the same college.
Even lending
as the
Felix,
person you're targeting.
Felix's bike when, yeah. Like, right at the start.
Right,
and it's like, you have calculated.
Bike.
It's almost like, it's almost a bit like he's paranormal. Like, supernatural. Yeah. Like, it's not normal to be... I feel like I'd have got a lot more out of the film if it had just kind of stuck to the themes of obsession, desire, you know, the working class fawning over the upper class, the upper class fawning over the lower, whatever.
Even if that cafe scene had been the last scene and it was just a simple, oh, look, we've bumped into each other, how's life for you, Oliver, how's life for you, Elsbeth, and that was it, I'd have still got loads more of that kind of what the film was trying to get at, and then it all crumbled apart when the flashback scenes happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That said, I want to circle back to what I said at the very start and say that I actually did have a really good time watching this film, and I think it's really good. It just doesn't quite stand up to the level of scrutiny that we reasonably have to have for the purposes of this podcast.
We'll just go back a little bit. He does kill Lady Elspeth on her...
Oh, yeah, he kills everyone.
Yeah.
Gets us to sign over the will.
But then jumping back forward again, one thing that we wouldn't have got if the film hadn't have gone in the direction it had is Barry Keoghan twirling around to... Sophie Ellis Bextor's murder on the dance floor with his cock out.
Is it real or do you think it's prosthetic?
I don't know.
It was a very nice good one. Prosthetic. Yeah. If it was...
And I do think that film's quite, like, taking out all the commentary and how we've, you know, dissected it. I do think that scene is quite an iconic scene and if you go endings of films this year, that'll be up there with quite an iconic ending to
top.
A film.
Yeah.
That and Barbie saying, I'm here to see my gynecologist is up there. I wasn't disappointed by it because I've actually started collating for the end of our year favourites, biggest disappointments of the year kind of thing that we started last year. It wouldn't be on that list. I did enjoy it. But I think now is probably a good time to just put our star ratings out there to say why.
I thought you were going to say two, Ben. I don't think you didn't like it that much.
So I went with 3.5.
I said 4.
And my reasoning's a bit like Ned's, although the what was it trying to get me to think... probably lowered it a little bit more than it did for you.
Yeah, I could reasonably have taught myself down to a 3.5.
Yeah. Beautiful film, had lots of fun. acting was great. It looked gorgeous. I've said, like, beautiful, blah, 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 blah. What it was trying to get me to feel was a bit, like, not quite there.
Would I watch it again? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of people... There's been quite polarising reviews of it as well, and I think that's because everyone takes their own perspective into every film.
Yeah.
But I think particularly with this one, depending on where you are on the wealth, level yeah. of wealth that you have,
yeah,
and take completely different things into this film.
Yeah.
And like some people have critiqued it for saying, oh, it's just been made for like the TikTok, Instagram generation to kind of fawn off it. But it's like, it has, I don't think it's purposely done it. Everyone is talking about it. Yeah. And for quite a small indie film that came out a few weeks ago now, but two of our friends messaged us today saying, is Saltburn worth seeing?
Yeah.
I might go see it in the cinema.
Yeah.
Which, it's clearly got that social media impact print.
But I don't think that's just clever marketing.
Yeah, and I don't think that's being forced either. No. It doesn't feel forced to me. It's not like some really scathing reviews like, oh, Emerald Fennell's just done this film to get it on and social films, like get it memed.
That as a criticism doesn't make sense to me, because Barbie and Oppenheimer pretty much 100% relied on social media marketing.
But it's like lightning in a bottle anyway. You can spot to me when it's been done on purpose.
Yeah.
I think TikTok has like changed, people say like the music industry, because you can hear when a song has been made for a TikTok dance.
TikTok, yeah.
I think when it comes to cinema and TV, you can't... I don't even know how you would go about, oh, I'm making a film to be memeified.
Memeified.
Or whatever it is. But yeah. I think this film just does it. And I think it's probably that nostalgic kind of noughties feeling more than anything.
Oh my God, yes. Especially when it gets... cheeky Christmas.
Yeah, like all those kind of things. I mean, Emerald Fennell, I mean, the two films now, she can put a good soundtrack together. Yeah. I always remember that Promising Young Woman trailer with the violin version of Britney's Toxic.
Yeah.
And it had like, did it have a Paris Hilton song in? Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
Like, she's quite good at getting that. And I'm very much looking forward to whatever the hell she does next. But, yeah.
Mm.
And to be honest with you, I just like a woman who won an Oscar for Promising Young Woman just to be within the mix, making films that have made us have a 40-minute conversation about it.
Yep.
That, to me, is an achievement in itself. So, yeah. Gaydar?
Yeah, I need to run and get it. You do the spiel.
Now, let's unsheath the Gaydar. It's a wonderful piece of machinery devised by Ned's own hand, and we use it to rank all the films and TV we discuss based on their LGBTQ plus appeal. Let's see where the Gaydar ranks Saltburn.
Oh, zip's a bit poor.
Is it a bit rusty? Haven't been used in a while.
Yeah, a bit dusty. Right, let's have a look. Do. Where is it? Okay. It is gayer than Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
I love how random these are.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Not quite as Everything Everywhere All at Once.
It's been so long since I watched that now, though.
Or not quite as Scream 6.
Sexuality isn't really discussed in this, but sexuality is very much present in this film.
Well, it also is queer sexuality as well. It's not.
That's what I mean, but it's not like Oliver's sexuality isn't. We don't know what it is, but it almost made it even hotter. And I think the Gaydar's probably spitting those out because Scream 6 had openly queer characters.
And it had explicit discussion about identity.
I would say if it's going around there, it probably is below Scream 6, but above Spider-Man Across. Because Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse...
Yeah, it was always above Spider-Man.
Oh, was it? Because that was...
It's either that side didn't of everything have everywhere.
Openly queer characters. It was just quite queer-coded at times.
Yeah.
But... Yeah.
I think it goes slightly below Everything Everywhere. Just ever so slightly. Obviously, it's an imperfect science at the moment, though.
Yeah. Perfect.
Great.
And that's all for this time. If you have enjoyed this episode of Gaze on Film, please subscribe, rate, and comment on your podcasting platform of choice. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram or Twitter. We are at Gaze on Film Pod. And check out our Letterboxd accounts, links of which are in the show notes. We'd love to hear your thoughts, really, actually, properly on this one, because I think
there's lots to talk about.
It inspires a lot of debate. So please do feel free to drop us a message. I wanted to say something, actually.
Say it.
Well, I always think, should I bother saying it? Because we want people to have seen the film before they listen. But I saw yesterday that this will be released for free on Amazon Prime on the 22nd of December, before Christmas. So if you want to do a rewatch, then go for it.
Yeah.
I have been Declan.
I have been Ned.
And this has been Gaze on Film. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.